This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 21st of February 25. Hello and welcome to the Winchester District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 21st of February 2025. Your readers today are Richard Stead.
Hello.
Heather Bryant.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Steve Russell. The main headlines this week are: terror as residents evacuated in siege, dismay as hat fair to be cut to one day, and three, chatty calves help to combat loneliness. So may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather.
Residents were evacuated and armed police called in during a siege that took place in Stanmore on Friday, February the 14th. The incident has resulted in one man being charged with multiple offences after he made threats to officers and refused to leave his house in Thurmond Crescent when police attended it as part of an investigation at 9 a.m. The man, Sam Hopkins, 29, of Thurmond Crescent, has since been charged with assault by beating, persistently making use of public communication network to cause annoyance, inconvenience, anxiety, affray, threat to damage, destruction of property, and two counts of using threatening, abusive, insulting words and behaviour with intent to cause fear of, provoke unlawful violence. He appeared at Basingstoke Magistrates Court on Monday, February the 17th. The road was cordoned off while police, fire services and ambulances dealt with the incident. With armed police spotted, several neighbours were also evacuated to New Life Church in Stanmore Lane while the standoff was ongoing. Police asked members of the public to avoid the area, saying, "We attended an address in Thurmond Crescent, Winchester, at around 9 a.m. today, 14th February, as part of our inquiries into an ongoing investigation. On our arrival, a man inside the address has made threats to officers and refused to leave the building. A cordon has been put in place while we and our partners from the fire and ambulance services attend. And as a precaution, we have evacuated a number of other addresses in the street. Please could we ask you to try to avoid the area while we are in attendance, and thank you to all for your patience." Several residents who had been allowed to stay in their homes just outside the cordon spoke of their fear. Sid Keith of Thurmond Crescent said, "He seems to be one bloke causing mayhem. I haven't seen something on this scale here. It has been going on for some time, since about 10 a.m. Those ambulances could be tied up from going to something else." Zara Coleman of Thurmond Crescent said she was gobsmacked by the incident. Meanwhile, her neighbour, Shauna Ross, said the incident had terrified her daughter. She said, "I had to fight the police to get home. My daughter is scared. She came home and said, 'They've got guns. They've got guns.'"
Dismay as hat fair to be cut to one day. 50-year-old event to be smaller after funding is slashed. Civic chiefs have expressed their disappointment that one of Winchester's biggest events is being cut down to just one day. While the Winchester Hat Fair has previously run for multiple days, organisers, play to the crowd, said that this year it will be only held in the city centre on Saturday, July 5th, due to lack of funds. This comes after the event, which celebrated its 50th anniversary last year, lost its regular Arts Council England National Portfolio Organisation, NPO, funding in 2023. Hat Fair Director Andrew Loretto said, "The arts, along with other public services, have a huge funding and sustainability challenge in the current climate. Despite that, and with goodwill and support from our communities and partners, I'm looking forward to staging a one-day hat fair. Councillor Lucille Thompson, Cabinet Member for Business and Culture, called the hat fair a fantastic staple of Winchester. She said it is crucial that we have a hat fair each year. She said it is disappointing that it is one day this year, but unfortunately Play to the Crowd lost a huge chunk of money from the Arts Council, and they have been struggling to make up that money by fundraising. It is unfortunate that it is only one day, but I feel that one day is better than no day at all. Councillor Thompson continued, I am sure that businesses are concerned about the shortened hat fair, but I think you only have to look at our footfall figures. Our high street is very busy and we have strong footfall as well as low vacancy rate. Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, said he is very sad to see the hat fair have to be cut back. Jonathan Kay, who founded the hat fair in 1974, has been contacted for comment.
And here we have chatty cafes help to combat loneliness. Loneliness is a killer, but a charitable initiative is looking to fight it and build the bridges missing in our communities. The Chatty Cafe scheme was set up in Cafe Nero on Winchester High Street to expand its ever-growing empire of chatter and natter tables. Felicia Condor, the director of Visiting Angels Central Hampshire, has been working to promote the scheme and said, "With Visiting Angels, we curb loneliness on a one-to-one basis, but we want to bring it to a community level." In 2021, the Health Survey for England report said that 22% of adults felt lonely at least some of the time, including 6% who reported that they often or always felt lonely. Alex Hosky founded the Chatty Cafe scheme after feeling lonely one wet and windy day and going to a supermarket cafe with her four-month-old son. Felicia said, "Loneliness is like a cancer, especially with our elderly. Loneliness brings back depression, anxiety and a lack of self-esteem." The care company director, originally from Ghana, has a passion for helping others and said she's looking for volunteers to help with the scheme. She said, "We're looking for volunteers and then we will be able to hire a place and do coffee mornings and afternoon teas." The Winchester Cafe opened on Tuesday, February the 4th and was visited by the Mayor of Winchester, Russell Gordon Smith. The Mayor said, "I am very aware that there are many people who would love to have a larger network of friends, and the Chatty Cafe scheme seems quite a simple way to not only enjoy a coffee, but also join a conversation and perhaps create a lasting friendship. I'm grateful to Cafe Nero for providing this facility." Bradley Wiltshire, the manager of Cafe Nero on Winchester High Street, was asked by Felicia if she could use a table and has been supporting the scheme. He said, "It's really good and I'm proud of being part of something helping out, especially with something like loneliness." Annette McCall, a hypnotherapist from Headbourne Worthy, said, "I think it's a wonderful idea. I'm a hypnotherapist and a lot of my clients say loneliness creates stress. It's important for people's mental health." And this is accompanied by a couple of lovely photos of the Mayor of Winchester, Russell Gordon Smith, who says, "The Chatty Cafe scheme seems a quite simple way to not only enjoy a coffee, but also to enjoy a conversation and perhaps create a lasting friendship." And he's sitting at the cafe with a group of ladies who are also drinking coffees, including the mayoress of Winchester, Diane Ashcroft. And they're definitely having a good, happy chat.
That concludes the headlines. And now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, First Person and Belgarum. The death notices. Michael Atkinson, peacefully at home on the 7th of February 25, aged 86. Douglas Buckingham, known as Doug, passed away at home on the 31st of January 2025, aged 94. Berger, Jennifer Ann, died peacefully at home on the 3rd of February 2025, aged 88. Margaret Joan Cambridge, née Almeida, passed away peacefully at Brackenlea Care Home on the 14th of January, aged 83. Cannings, Doreen Joan Cannings, passed away peacefully at Home Park Nursing Home on 27th of January 2025, aged 94. Christine Collinson, passed away peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on 8th of February at 84 years old. Neil Collis, passed away peacefully on Thursday the 6th of February, age 81. Betty Crowther, passed away peacefully at home, 5th of February, age 97. Sheila Dora Davidge, née Stevens, formerly of Middlebrook Street, Winchester, and then Eastleigh, sadly passed away on 30th of January, 25, aged 88. Glaria Peter Antal, died on the 7th of February, 2025. Yvonne Harfield, Joyce Harfield, passed away peacefully at Tegfield House on the 30th of January, age 94. Mary Eleanor Harris, née Bennett, passed away peacefully at home on the 24th of January, age 98. Susan Elizabeth Lydiard, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospital on 31st of January, age 75. Peg, Deirdre Jocelyn Peg, passed away peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 31st of January, aged 88. Pemberton, David. It is with deep sadness that the passing of David Pemberton of Ladycroft, Allsford, who died on the 6th of February, aged 87. Eileen Joan Proctor, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 5th of February, aged 85. Colin Showell, passed away peacefully on the 30th of January, aged 77. Smith, Irene Gertrude Trudy Smith, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospital on the 16th of January, aged 96. Faye Trevor, née Hodges, passed away on Thursday, 13th of February at Treslick Hospital. Vandersteen, William Albert, known as Bill, passed away at Winchester Hospital on the 30th of January, aged 93. Frank Ward, passed away peacefully on the 20th of January, age 89. Whittier, Anthony John, known as Tosh, passed away peacefully on the 7th of February, age 86. Weavers, Maria Mitzi, passed away on the 7th of February, age 94. Wright, Colin Stephen Wright, passed away peacefully at home on the 3rd of February, aged 68. Madeline Wayard, née Firmage, passed away on 17th of January, 25, aged 90 years. That concludes the death notices. Now we have Christian comment.
This Christian comment from the Reverend Philip Crinks is headed A Time to Sow. With the frosts behind us, it is time to start sowing those beans, peas and lettuces. We do this in faith that if the ground is good, they will spring up and bear a fine harvest in the summer. Appropriately, the traditional reading for this coming Sunday is the parable of the sower. The sower went out to sow, as some Hampshire gardeners will do this weekend. As he sowed his seed, some fell by the wayside and was trodden down or eaten by birds. Some fell on stony ground and lacked moisture. Some fell among thorns and was choked. But some fell on good ground and sprang up. And this was the seed which yielded a hundredfold harvest. Jesus explained that the point of the parable is that what matters most in the world is the seed which he is sowing among us through who he is and what he teaches, but that it also matters how we receive it. Do we have a commitment to truth? Are we open-hearted enough not only to hear what he is saying, but also to stick to it? If so, the seed which he sows will, with patience, bring forth a huge harvest in and through us. Some of you will know the amazing paintings of the sower by Van Gogh, who was fascinated by this story. He painted it in four different versions. The most famous image, painted in Arles in 1888, is completely bathed in the brightness of an enormous setting sun. The sower himself almost disappears into the landscape. It is as if, since the sowing is really God's work, the human sower is not as important as we tend to think. Van Gogh represents sowing as not only a physical activity, but also a mystical one, an expression of trust in God's good purposes for humankind. None of this will surprise you if you know Van Gogh's real ambition. He never really wanted to be a painter. He wanted to be a preacher in the Dutch Reformed Church, like his father and his grandfather before him. He did not find theology exams to be his cup of tea, but for some years he worked as a lay minister in a tough mining region, showing such commitment and humility that he was nicknamed the Christ of the coal mines. Perhaps at this time, heightened international tensions, we all need to get out into our gardens and allotments and into the tough places of need around us to remind ourselves how the world really works. In sowing, as in other areas of life, we human beings are participating in processes which are most powerfully shaped by a power far beyond the human. The traditional prayer for this Sunday is this: O Lord God, who sees that we do not put our trust in anything that we ourselves do, mercifully grant that by your power we may be defended against all the adversities we face through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. Reverend Philip Crinks.
And now we move on to letters from the editor.
First letter is from Dave Maguire. Lots of trees. I have lived in the city for 50 years. I am shocked by the sound of yet another chainsaw cutting down our trees. They were planted for us all to enjoy. And that's from Dave Maguire, Chesil Street, Winchester.
And Simon Lever writes, worthy tribute. For around 200 years, the Brigade of Gurkhas continued to have a positive impact upon our country. That's from the Chronicle, February the 13th. Their reputation as the finest soldiers in the world and cultural blending with British Army officers is simply awesome. They have always been an integral part of the British military. To their credit, the Gurkhas of Nepal fought in the First World War in 1914 and in modern times the Falklands in 1982. Bravery, loyalty and patriotism are instinctive and ingrained. Winchester has served them well as a most notable presence in our city. It is always an honour to witness their presence during military ceremonies in distinctive uniforms. A global reference centre for Gurkha's heritage is a most worthy tribute. And that was from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
This letter from Michael and Rachel Curtis is headed Blocked Off. We are writing to you about the station drop-off area, which has been a problem for some time. We have family living in London. They have stopped driving to help the environment and now travel by train, coming home to Winchester most weekends. The drop-off zone at Winchester Station has been blocked off by concrete blocks, and there is barely room for one car between these and the taxi rank. Apparently, the reason these concrete blocks have been installed here is because of a line of trees whose roots have damaged the paving stones. This situation has existed for a few years. We believe that Network Rail would like to cut down these trees, and we assume that the City Council have quite rightly said no. Surely it would not be beyond the capability of those in charge of the station to create a small earth circle around each tree. A local builder, gardener could do this easily. Reset the paving stones around these and then take away the concrete blocks. This would make it easier for people to drop off and pick up passengers without causing a problem for the buses which swing round the corner and need a lot of room. This would greatly enhance the station forecourt. Michael and Rachel Curtis, Kilmerston, Wolsford.
Time to sort farcical parking system. So, Hampshire County Council is looking at increasing the charges for on-street parking. So motorists are having to help fill the black hole in the council's finances. I hope when they sit down with their abacus, they consider those of us who are obliged to have parking permits and they extend them to cover Sundays, because I, for one, won't be happy with an increase in charges. I and many other permit holders who live around the central car park are sick of providing free parking because drivers take up permit places on Sundays because they don't like paying for... But those of us who do, who venture out, find we have no choice but to pay to park on our return. The whole parking system is a farce and badly thought out, no doubt by some highly paid individual. It's time council started listening to residents, because before long, their coffers will be lacking because no one will want to come to Winchester. And that's from Monica Gill, Lawn Street, Winchester.
And Carolyn Bullen writes, Waspy Woes. In response to Roger Stevens' rant about waspy women, whatever have we done to upset him? Chronicle Letters, January the 9th. May I be permitted to share my own experiences? In 2011, I was offered voluntary redundancy, along with many others, from my local government job with Adult Services. I had in total over 20 years' experience, so with a small occupational pension and redundancy money, I thought I would be able to manage the 18 months until my state pension was due. Unfortunately, Mr. Cameron had other ideas, and the government was accelerating the proposed increase in retirement age for women. I was only informed by letter from the Department of Pensions that my retirement date was to be moved shortly before the expected date had been reached. Not once, but three times. In the end, I had to wait until I was 63 and 3 months, nearly 5 years from when I had taken redundancy. During this time, I had no opportunity to save or pay in extra NI contributions, as I had no job. Who would employ someone who's shortly expecting to retire? As a result, my state pension is less than the full amount, and because I have a small occupational pension, I have been told I do not qualify for pension credit. So, an additional kick in the teeth was the removal of the winter fuel allowance. I do try to keep informed of current affairs, although they can be terribly depressing. I regularly listen to the radio news items and go online to the BBC webpage, and I do buy the Chronicle every week for local news. I do not go on X, TikTok or Facebook, etc., as I find they are just talking shops for ill-informed, opinionated people and conspiracy theorists spouting off in their own little bubbles. Perhaps the reason no waspy women have thus far risen to the bait is because they have far better things to do with their time and are getting on with it. And that was from Carolyn Bullen, Battery Hill, Stanmore, Winchester.
This letter from Anne Balfour is headed Sad Decline. Read a letter about the decline of Winchester from Julia Sanderson, Chronicle Letters, January the 9th, Change for Worse. Yes, it is sad. The problem of weeds is increased by this year's leaves on top of those left from last year. This creates compost, ideal for weeds to thrive. It's now only possible to use half of some pavements. If there is no money, could those on community service help? It can be quite satisfying to achieve an improvement. Or is there a union issue with this? and Balfour, Clausentum Road, St Cross, Winchester.
Trump's foul and slimy web. Something has to appear in writing at the grassroots level to tell it as it is. Mr. Trump and Mr. Musk, they lie, they bear false witness. They're addicted to avarice, they are addicted to pride, not the sort of which one can be proud of. They are addicted to anger, they abuse the power of the word and its consequent logic. They treat science like dictators who burn books and control the airways, and they are creators of chaos without any respect for other people, who to them seem to be mere numbers. They both remind me of Satan, shown in medieval frescoes, a half-human spider-like monster greedily gobbling up people whose legs and arms spill messily out of their mouths. I cannot say I'm a Christian, but like a great many people around the world, I have been brought up and lived with ethical and philosophical ideas based on Christian principles, which at base are not so very different from those found in Muslim, Hinduism, and the great Chinese traditions. It's all very well kowtowing to Trump's version of the USA, and no doubt it's a relief to be allowed to make jokes around the word Trump, which in some parts of England has traditionally meant breaking wind. But we are all in a real situation, and as real people, not algorithms, we need to prepare ourselves to make a stand against these monsters who are sucking others into their foul and slimy web. And that is from Jock MacDonald, Stockbridge Road, Fulford, Winchester.
And Tony Gaster writes, "A long wait. After years of promises, it appears there will be a long wait for any new hospital. Those wonderful people who look after us when we have an accident or are sick have to cope with ageing facilities. Yet we have huge sums to give away in the Chagos Islands. Shouldn't those responsible put local needs first? As our population ages, the demand for health services increases. I just wonder if a solution would be a new hospital at Bushfield Camp." And that was from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
This letter from Joe Gribben is headed "Decision of Huge Concern." In December 2024, I became aware of an announcement made by Hampshire County Council that speech and language therapy input provided by their communication and interaction team was to be significantly reduced across all special schools. Only children with speech and language therapy input specified on their education and health care plans, EHC, will now be seen by this team in order to fulfil HCC's legal requirement. As someone who works in a special school, this decision is a huge concern. What about HCC's requirement to support the communication development of some of the most complex and vulnerable children in Hampshire? What about HCC's requirement to support teaching staff working in special schools, who will now be solely responsible for many children's communication development? All children in special schools have an EHC plan, but the majority will not have speech and language therapy input specified on their plan. This is because special schools can provide a specialist communication environment within which children flourish and make progress with their communication skills. Teachers and support staff are highly skilled but are not speech and language therapists. Therapists are needed in special schools to help school staff provide this specialist communication environment. Therapists work by giving staff training, working in classrooms to demonstrate communication strategies and undertaking communication projects. They help schools monitor the communication environment and provide support with the new implementation of new communication approaches. All of this input has now been stopped. Ironically, the communication and interaction team was originally funded and set up by HCC because children's communication needs were not being met in special schools by NHS speech and language therapy provision. HCC were also losing special educational needs and disability tribunals and being required to fund costly placements at independent schools linked to these communication needs not being met. This cut in therapy provision makes it only likely that HCC will return to spending more on funding places in schools and colleges in the independent sector. My understanding is that this decision by HCC was taken in isolation, with immediate effect, and without the courtesy of any consultation with families, carers, or the special schools. Joe Gribben, Tryloyan Close, Chandler's Ford, Eastleigh.
This letter is from Patty Cunningham. Save the date. The Earl Mountbatten Memorial Service will take place on Sunday, September the 7th at Romsey Abbey at 3 p.m. For further information, please email romsey.secretary@rbl.community. And that's from Patty Cunningham, Romsey Mountbatten Branch Secretary.
And Joe Espiner writes, support our precious festival. Regarding your story, Hat Fair to return to Winchester for one day festival, it's deeply concerning to me how the Hat Fair has diminished from the three-day large-scale event of my youth, encompassing a parade, a family day at the Arbour, and packed shows across the city, to now a one-day event with limited performances in the city centre. I adored it as a child, the whole place alive with laughter, colour and unpredictability. It fostered in me a lifelong appreciation of art performance and eccentricity. I love it now as a father, watching my son's delight at the dancers, jugglers and acrobats. I understand how different times are for the arts, how difficult times are for the arts. Successive governments have hacked away at funding for community theatre, performance art and free social gatherings. It seems they won't be content until everything is walled off, unavailable to those who can't afford it, and public life is a grey, isolated trudge. I hope the people of Winchester appreciate just how wonderful, miraculous even, it is for a city of our size to have an annual free arts festival on our doorsteps. I myself will be making a donation to Play to the Crowd, considering it back pay for 40 years of great memories, plus volunteering to help with the event itself. I implore as many people as possible to do the same. This is a use-it-or-lose-it situation, and we must fight to support and save our precious festival. And that was from Joe Espiner, Chandler Road, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
This letter from Monica Gill is headed, Time to Sort Farcical Parking System. So, Hampshire County Council is looking at increasing the charges for on-street parking, so motorists are having to help fill the black hole in the council's finances. I hope when they sit down with their abacus, they consider those of us who are obliged to have parking permits and they extend them to cover Sundays. Because I, for one, won't be happy with an increase in charges. I and many other permit holders who live around the central car park are sick of providing free parking because drivers take up permit places on Sundays because they don't like paying. But those of us who do venture out find we have no choice but to pay to park on our return. The whole parking system is a farce and badly thought out, no doubt by some highly paid individual. It's time council started listening to residents, because before long their coffers will be lacking because no one will want to come to Winchester. Monica Gill, Lawn Street, Winchester.
And this letter is from Jim Shea, or Shea, my apologies. Boris Spoof. Your spoof report of the disgraced former politician Boris Johnson's trip to Winchester shows satire is alive and well. That's from the on the Chronicle on February the 13th. Congratulations from Jim Shea, Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester.
We now continue with Chronicle comment.
heading, Hat Fair must get back to grassroots. Sad that the Hat Fair appears to be in serious decline. Until recently, it was a thriving four-day event every July, starting with a school's day on a Thursday and taking over the city centre with a climax on the Sunday, with a great event on Oram's Arbour and more recently North Wales Recreation Ground. It had shrunk in recent years, with last year a launch on Friday evening and 2 days of performances. This year it will be held on just one day, Saturday, July the 5th. It is the UK's longest running street festival, started by Jonathan Kay in 1974, who now lives in Glastonbury. It was a slightly anarchic festival, with seemingly little organisation, but which captivated hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And there lay the problem. As it grew in popularity and size, it had to be organised. As it was organised, the costs went up. As the costs went up, it had to get external funding. As we all know, if you depend on external funding, then you are at the whim of people based a long way away from Winchester. And so it has proved. A couple of years ago, the Arts Council removed it from being a national portfolio organisation and cut its funding. Perhaps it is for the best. The Hat Fair will not die. The best acts do not always cost an arm and a leg and may well bring the event closer to its roots. Devolution is the buzzword at the moment. Make the Hat Fair a grassroots event again. Bring back the school's day. The Chronicle would back that.
And here we have Spectre of Cuts Lingers. Hampshire County Council has had its request to government to put up the council tax by 15% rejected. So, what now? There will be huge anxiety within the County Council on how they are going to balance the budget. The spectre of even more cuts in services, together with more redundancies, will stalk the corridors of Queen Elizabeth Court. This coming on top of many years of savings, seeing everything from redesigning how services are delivered to downsizing and selling the family silver, will be hugely depressing for councillors and county council staff. County councillors must get tired and demoralised by this relentless search for savings, cuts. It must be really difficult to work creatively and with dedication when every year the service you care about and your job is on the line. It is this relentless, constant stress that must be really difficult to live with. Someone compared the County Council to the Titanic, the image being of a slow, steady sinking. No doubt some readers will have a view that, given the struggles of local businesses and the private sector to keep afloat, people in public service are privileged. Some perceptions about a job for life, together with a variety of pension perks linked to it being a cushy number, still perpetuate. Local government workers contribute substantially to their pensions. These myths have hopefully been challenged over the years. The introduction of compulsory competitive tendering, local authorities introducing vigorous performance regimes linked to a variety of statutory legal requirements, to name just a few. The latter issue is key. The law requires many services to be delivered by councils, some with very tough inspection regimes. But the constant worry of meeting what the law requires with ever-decreasing cash is a very real crisis. The job of council members and staff is to ensure that the law is not broken. But how realistic is this in the current circumstances? It is impossible to manage the increasing demands of, for example, special educational needs. The care required is expensive and the costs constantly rise. Politicians of all persuasions are quick to praise the dedication of those professionals, but the issues around this area of care require fundamental reassessment and change, but they're always kicked into the long grass. This is only one aspect of what some councils are struggling with. There are numerous others: highways, libraries, building regulation and conservation, rights of way, social care, planning, too many to list here. The answer may be to review or scrap the legal requirements on councils, change the law, taking away the requirement to provide a service. If one does this, there's no need for staff or anything else to deliver anything. But in the last 20 plus years, despite the years of austerity, the volume of legal requirements on councils and inspections has substantially increased. There's something really odd here. If society needs new things done and Parliament legislates to make things happen, the money needs to come from somewhere. Councils have been skilled in constantly trying to balance both the need to meet their statutory obligations by finding the money. What is clear is that this is no longer possible. The future looks really bleak. There is no possibility of any new cash. Councils have exhausted most of the avenues to make economies. Hampshire County Council will dip into reserves. But this is a one-off. The possibilities of local government reorganisation in the future might, in the long term, assist in releasing savings that can be recycled. But for now, it looks like hard-pressed council staff will have to cope with even more redundancies.
And now we have Belgarum.
Two items from them this week. The first, hidden chippy still frying. We're still here. A city centre fish and chip restaurant wants to remind customers it is still open despite extensive scaffolding outside its door. The corrugated scaffolding, which went up on February the 10th outside Winchester Guildhall, covers the takeaway door to shoal. Manager Chris Austin said that while it is an eyesore, he does not expect it to impact business too much. He says, "I don't think it will affect our takeaway service. We have a sign that will direct people towards the door. We didn't know about the scaffolding. We only heard about it a week before it went up. But if it helps fix whatever damage, then we have to do what we have to do." Mr. Austin continued, "We are open. With the takeaway, it looks after itself. It only takes one person. But it is now really quiet." And the second Belgarum item, former reporter's political satire. It is the book that people have urged former Chronicle reporter Warwick Payne to write for years, and now it's finally here. Town Hall, mostly a fiction, is a political satire that does to local government what Yes Minister did to Westminster. It's being launched with an event featuring the Lord Mayor of Southampton, Councillor Dave Shields. He's a long-standing colleague of the author, who is also a city councillor, giving him first-hand experience of the civic centre's inner workings. Before politics, Warwick spent a decade in newspapers, working as Daily Echo's sister paper, the Hampshire Chronicle Chief's reporter in Winchester.
And now we have a letter from Westminster.
This month, in Parliament, I've been fighting for our region's health services, raising the issue of child poverty, working on the Tobacco and Vapes Bill Committee, and championing the environment. It's been a rather odd month with so many important environmental issues, seeing the Labour government and Conservatives on the same side, and teaming up to block Liberal Democrat measures. I joined my Liberal Democrat colleagues in Parliament to stand up to water company bosses. You should not be expected to pay for their bonuses while they continue to fail to meet their environmental obligations. We urgently need a fair deal that prioritises people and the environment above the bonuses of Southern Water bosses. For too long they have been able to get away with financial mismanagement, knowing hard-working people would be expected to pick up the tab. The other parties blocked our amendment for now, but I'll not give up fighting for justice when it comes to water and sewage. The Climate and Nature Bill, introduced by my Lib Dem colleague Ros Savage, enjoyed lively debate in the Commons Chamber. Not surprisingly, Conservatives and Reform opposed this bill outright, and disappointingly, The government's actions on climate are not yet matching their past rhetoric. Negotiations continue, however, and I'm optimistic that Ros and supporting MPs from a number of other parties will be able to get important measures included in future legislation. Barely a week in Parliament goes by when I'm not fighting for our health services. I had the opportunity to challenge the Prime Minister once again on the state of our health services at Prime Minister's Questions. Years of underinvestment and unsafe staffing levels in maternity have resulted in the NHS paying an astonishing 1.15 billion, yes, 1.15 billion pounds every year in compensation due to avoidable life-changing injuries. So I pushed the government to make improving our maternity wards in Winchester and across the whole country a priority for investment. I also challenged the government's commitment to tackling child poverty, which has become a big problem in part thanks to the previous Conservative government's neglect. The Child Poverty Action Group has reported that there are 4.3 million children in the UK living in poverty. In a classroom of 30, that is 9 children living in poverty. Given that the government has ruled out scrapping the two-child benefit cap, I ask the government to commit to publishing measurable targets for reducing child poverty during this Parliament. I was honoured to sit on the Tobacco and Vapes Bill Committee, which has now concluded its work on the bill. It's been a whole month of work going line by line through the legislation, but it is really exciting. We could help create a smoke-free generation. Back at home, I've been on a mission to visit every state school across Winchester and the Meon Valley. I recently visited Itchen Abbas Primary School and met with staff and pupils from King's and the Henry Beaufort. We discussed smoking and vapes, and I was really impressed with their thoughtful consideration on the issue and the wide level of support for cracking down on these items.
Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 21st of February at 7:06 a.m. and begins at 17:32. On Wednesday the 26th of February it ends at 6:55 a.m. and begins again at 17:41. If you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you receive from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we continue with further items of general news. Okay.
Car park to be haven of wildlife and flowers. A large grass area in a village's car park is set to become a wildflower and wildlife haven. The idea is the brainchild of Swanmore's community safety officer, Gary McCulloch, who initially gained permission from the parish council to use the land in the central community car park in Church Road. He applied to Councillor Malcolm Wallace, a Green councillor, who represents the area on Hampshire County Council, for funding to get the project off the ground. In approving the grant, Councillor Wallace, who also lives in the village, said, "When Gary approached me and I listened to his enthusiasm for the idea, I had to agree it was an amazing project, not only for the village, but also for the younger generation who could be involved from a very early age. The earlier the next generation understands our climate problem, the better. I cannot think of a better way to start, and I wanted to help such a worthy cause." Gary then asked the residents of the village for their help, and together they set up the Swanmore Wildflower Group. The objective of the group is to turn a grass patch at the centre of the village into a nature haven, as well as an area for education. Village resident and Swanmore club leader Rachel Wade said, "I joined because I'm interested in gardening for wildlife and I would like to encourage the cubs to care about the natural environment as well. It's great to have the cubs helping their community and hopefully enjoying the new area for years to come. Gary envisages there will be a log pile for invertebrates, several bee hotels, and a stone pile for reptiles, among other habitats. He also hopes that the dew pond at the centre of the area will also attract other insects, which in turn will attract bats and birds. Gary said, "Nationally, our biodiversity is under threat, and I see the small patch as a magnet for flying insects and birds as they pass over our lovely village." He hopes this will also spark other people's interest in the natural world on our doorstep. The group is open to those with an interest in the natural world, and they will welcome ideas from these people. Gary said, "Someone with a knowledge of subjects like bees, butterflies, migrating birds, pond life, wildflowers or something would be more than welcome to come along and help us all to learn. As well as the village youth groups like the Beavers, Cubs and Guides, who will be helping with bug hunts and the National Butterfly Count, Swanmore Primary School has expressed an interest in the project as part of their biodiversity curriculum. The group will meet for a few hours several times throughout the year."
New town plan goes to Whitehall. A developer fighting to build a new town near Winchester has submitted the idea to the government. The O'Flynn Group proposes a 6,000 home town around Micheldever Station, a campaign started by the previous landowner in 1989. The group has formally submitted its plan to the Labour government's New Towns Task Force to assess its deliverability. A spokesman for Micheldever Station Newtown said, "In December 2024, we made a submission to the government's Newtown Task Force, setting out the deliverability of a new town at Micheldever Station, including 40% affordable housing provision. With the site being in single ownership and benefiting from the existing rail station at its heart, this is an ideal site to deliver a design-led legacy development. With the government's increased housing targets, the unmet needs across Hampshire now stands at some 90,000 homes. Micheldever Station Newtown can make a significant contribution towards this requirement on a site with deliverable infrastructure, requirements and rail-based access to Winchester, Agingstoke, Southampton and Portsmouth. The news has faced backlash from campaigners and civic chiefs alike, with Martin Todd, Liberal Democrat, the leader of Winchester City Council, calling the plans unsustainable. He said, "I'd have been amazed if they hadn't submitted it, but just submitting it to the government doesn't make it a thought-through plan or a good idea." Councillor Stephen Godfrey, Conservative City Councillor, said it shouldn't come as a surprise that when the government announced their new homes working group, inevitably all the developers which had any idea of building out in the countryside would be submitting their proposals. "The simple matter is Micheldever remains an isolated rural settlement with very poor connection to jobs and amenities and infrastructure, and there's natural water supply, but there's no existing sewage treatment for a large number of homes. It's a very poor area for building a large new town." Tessa Robertson, chair of the Diva Society, said, "A large new town in this location was submitted by the previous developer of the scheme of to Gordon Brown's EcoTown initiative and was soundly rejected, primarily on transport grounds, with the Department of Transport concluding that there were very significant issues concerning rail congestion and trains at capacity, and that the new town would cause major traffic congestion in the M3 area."
And here we have City Centre Surgery opening, a good news story for the NHS. A City Centre Surgery has held a celebration to mark its grand opening. Staff at the recently completed St Clement's Surgery on Upper Brook Street marked the occasion on Friday, February the 14th, following the move from their old workplace just a few hundred yards away in Tanner Street. Dozens of guests were in attendance, including both current and former surgery staff, patients, city councillors, Winchester MP Dr Danny Chambers, and line of duty star Tommy Jessop, who had previously visited the new surgery to help cut the ribbon during its soft opening in January. Dr Chambers helped to put the finishing touches to the surgery, unveiling the plaque outside its front door. In a speech, he said, "I'm over the moon about this because having an essential service like this in the middle of Winchester, really accessible as a mental health lead, I'm aware that GP surgeries take the real brunt of mental health care. They are often the first port of call for people with mental health issues, and they come to their GP and they get their first reassurance, the first time to open up about their problems, and sometimes they get referred. Sometimes the waiting list is so long they end up coming back to the GP repeatedly during that wait. So, thank you GPs for all you do, specifically helping people with mental health. I have been a trustee of a mental health charity for several years, and it takes a toll on your own mental health and emotional health as well when you're dealing with people who are waiting to get help and then coming back to you time and time again. And also, we are aware that the NHS is under strain, but keeping people healthy and in their community is where we have to be headed. And GPs and GP surgeries helping people get their treatment at home, get out of hospital, this is how we're going to improve the entire NHS. Dr. Nikki Rose, one of the doctors working at the surgery, said, "We feel incredible. It has been such a long journey getting here, but we are thrilled to have this new space. The feedback we have had has been fantastic. Everyone is really pleased." And that includes photos of a lot of people inside the new surgery, which is, of course, just on the other side of the road from the Hampshire Chronicle studio where we're reading at this very moment. And a photo of Danny Chambers outside the surgery, beaming and exposing the plaque on the side of the new surgery. Thank goodness it's opened.
BBC Proms ad for choir. Winchester Cathedral chorister parents have raised £4,000 in 3 days to help buy a full-page advert promoting the choir in this year's BBC Proms brochure. The Dean and Chapter had already decided to book a quarter-page advert to boost awareness and ensure that its professional singers remain among the finest in the country. By accepting the £4,000 donation offer from parents and taking an entire page, the Cathedral will gain maximum exposure to a readership of around 500,000 music lovers. The Dean and Chapter are also seeking advice from parents about the advert's content. Further promotion, costing many thousands of pounds, has been authorised for other Hampshire publications, as well as in BBC Music Magazine and the Association of English Cathedrals Network. A cathedral spokeswoman stressed that this had been a private fundraising campaign and said that they had been delighted to accept this very generous gesture from the chorister parents and former choristers that shows the lifelong connection people have with our choral foundation. "We were happy to agree to the aims of the fundraising on these terms, which demonstrates our desire to work collaboratively with the chorister parents on our shared ambition to maintain and develop choral excellence at Winchester Cathedral."
Continuing with activities at the Cathedral, Dancing with Ocean Giants. Families dance beneath three sculptures of sperm whales in the nave of Winchester Cathedral at a silent disco on Saturday night. The sculptures were created by artist Tessa Campbell-Fraser for the Cathedral's Whales Art installation and will be in place until February the 26th. The Cathedral has put on plenty of other ocean-themed activities, including interactive trails, circus performances, and virtual reality experiences. people of all ages descended on the cathedral on February the 15th to dance the night away at two silent discos, one for families held between 7 and 8:30pm and another for adults that ran from 9pm until 10:30pm. Guests were given a pair of headphones that let them choose between three channels of music featuring musical icons such as Britney Spears, Beyoncé, Queen, TLC, Take That, Oasis, Steps and Madonna. Before the event, a cathedral spokesman said, looking for a family activity to entertain all ages? From grandpas that can groove to mums that mambo, this event offers a unique opportunity to party in the nave of the historic Winchester Cathedral. A great way to meet other local families and tire your children out before bedtime. On Wednesday, families had the chance to enjoy a fun and educational puppet show, exploring the tale of sea creatures and their battle to survive in an ocean full of rubbish, put on by theatre companies Circo Rumbaba.
Bridge reopens to pedestrians. A bridge near Winchester's railway station, which has been under renovation for several months longer than initially intended, has reopened to pedestrians, but is still closed to traffic. Network Rail has sent out the last in a long series of letters to local residents explaining that it has had to postpone the provisional reopening of St Paul's Bridge to February the 28th. It had already been postponed to February the 13th, although the work was originally scheduled to finish on December the 7th last year. St Paul's Bridge was set to have a new railing installed after its old fencing was described as ugly. The original green barrier installed at the bridge near Upper High Street was put up after a death there in 2020. However, soon after the work started, the bridge was found to have significant defects in its parapet walls. Now, almost 3 months later, residents are wondering when the work will finally finish. In the most recent letter sent to residents, Network Rail said, "Unfortunately, additional complexities in ensuring the structural integrity of the bridge have necessitated a further extension. We are sorry for the continued delays."
Jab invites for thousands. Hundreds of thousands of older people in the South East will receive RSV vaccine invites. The NHS is urging those aged 75 to 79, or who turned 80 after September the 1st, 2024, to book their vaccination appointments. This comes as NHS chiefs warn that respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, is not just a winter illness. RSV affects the airways and lungs and can lead to severe lung infections like pneumonia in older adults. The NHS began vaccinating against RSV on September the 1st, and more than 278,000 eligible people in the South East have already received the jab. This puts the region among the highest uptakes in England. Caroline Reid, NHS England's Regional Director of the Commissioning in the South East, said, "RSV is not just a winter illness. While we see an increase in cases during the winter, it can occur year-round and make older people seriously ill. That's why it's vital for everyone eligible to get vaccinated." A study in The Lancet found the first season of vaccination could prevent up to 2,500 hospital admissions, 15,000 GP visits, and 60,000 RSV illnesses in older adults nationwide. More information on RSV symptoms and vaccination is available on the NHS website.
10K race returns to City this weekend. The Winchester 10K will be returning on Sunday, February the 23rd. It will feature a one-lap closed road route, starting outside the Guildhall, then heading up St George's Street before turning towards Kingsworthy. The return leg of the run passes through Headbourneworthy and back towards Winchester before finishing at the North Walls Recreation Ground. Participant registration from 7:15 a.m. with the start at 8:30 a.m. Several roads will be closed in the city centre from 8:15 a.m. The closures include Andover Road, Worthy Road, Hyde Street and Wellhouse Lane, with diversions in place. There will also be disruption to several stagecoach services during the event. Service number 2, the 8:30 a.m. journey from Winchester to Stanmore, will start from outside M&S in St George Street at 8:30 to try and beat the road closure of Friars Gate. Service 3, the 8 a.m. journey, will run as normal, but on return to Winchester will not serve the bus station, instead finishing at the foot of King Alfred's statue. Service 6, the first three journeys at 8:30, 9:25 and 10:25 will need to run between Winchester and Springvale via Winall Tesco roundabout and the A33. The first two will also need to return by the same route, while the 10:25 a.m. from Winchester should be able to return along Worthy Road as usual. Additionally, the 8:30 a.m. journey will need to start from the roundabout at the foot of King Alfred's statue rather than in the bus station. And there are several other services that will be disrupted. Better that you ring the local services to find out when buses will be running.
And here we have men's mental health support at workshops. A cafe in Winchester City Centre has brought back a men's hub to help support their mental health and battle toxic masculinity. Cabinet Rooms in Jury Street is hosting 3 well-being workshops across the next few weeks with the help of charity Beyond Equality and funding from Movember. Gary Whiter, co-owner of Cabinet Rooms, said, "When we opened the Cabinet Rooms, we wanted the place to be a hub for the local community. We wanted to create a safe space where people could come and be themselves and meet like-minded people. And we wanted to provide the environment where people could create a network and a community around them. That's the big reason for doing it, so we were really honoured and privileged. It's run by a charity called Beyond Equality, and we were the first hub outside London. The mental well-being workshops are an established workshop that takes place in different community groups around the place. When the workshops took place last January, attendees were charged £18 for a single session and a drink. This year, thanks to the funding that has changed, Gary said, this year it's free. It's funded by Movember. People can just come along and participate and buy a drink if they want, but there is no pressure to buy anything. Speaking about his hopes for the future, Gary continued, I hope it continues for years to come. We've had good feedback last year. Obviously, we will see how this event goes, but it is also very dependent on the funding. Movember has provided funding, so provided they get the funding again, then I hope they might consider coming back to Winchester next year. The first session on Tuesday, January the 28th, Men and Mental Wellbeing, explored what well-being means to participants and encouraged self-reflection. The second session, Masculinities and Seeking Support, has been rescheduled to Tuesday, February the 11th, and will look at the building support networks. And the final workshop, Men and Building Supportive Communities, has yet to be rescheduled, but will discuss active listening and empathy. And workshops are for men aged over 18. And there's a picture of Gary Whiter, the co-owner of the Cabinet Room, standing outside. They have a beautiful grey edging to all the windows and doors, and it's on Jury Street, opposite the Theatre Royal and the Arc.
This item is headed Goodies in Store at Watercress Festival. The 21st annual Alsford Watercress Festival will host a variety of unique cake and bake stalls. The event, which celebrates the start of the UK watercress season, will take place on Sunday, May the 18th. Among the 130 stalls, 3 Hampshire baking businesses, A. Basing Bakes, the Homemade Brownie Company and Pauline Macarons, will be returning. A. Basing Bakes founded by Helen Lang and supported by husband Harvey, produces a range of sweet and savoury gluten-free products, many of which have won great taste awards. Helen said, "I was encouraged to start a business by Harvey. I had spent 10 years cooking in various venues, including schools, retirement homes, a golf club, and as an agency chef. But when I started, I really didn't know what direction to take the business in." She began experimenting with gluten-free recipes after a friend's mother mentioned the limited supermarket options. The Basingstoke Company has been part of the Watercress Festival for more than 5 years. The Homemade Brownie Company, founded by Laura Bland, specialises in gluten-free delights. Laura said, "This will be our 4th year at the Alsford Watercress Festival. We look forward to returning every spring due to the fun and unique nature of the event. It's lovely to see all sorts of people travel to celebrate the best of locally sourced produce, and it's a great opportunity for locals to discover businesses they may not know were right on the doorstep all along." The company was born out of Laura's craving for sweet treats after being diagnosed with gluten intolerance. Pauline Macarons, established during lockdown, will also be present at the festival. The business was founded by Pauline Genevieve after a French friend declared her to master macarons. I'm sorry, a French friend dared her to master macarons. This would be Pauline's second appearance at the event. She said, "I absolutely loved it. It was exceptionally well organised, with a vibrant atmosphere and streets filled with people eager to discover and enjoy quality food. The feedback I received was incredible, and it was wonderful to connect with so many new customers, some of whom have since become regulars. The festival will also feature 40 Hampshire farmers' market stands offering a wide range of food and drink. The event promises to be a celebration not just of watercress, but of Hampshire's finest small and medium-sized enterprise bakery business."
Highbury Honour for Saints Stalwart. A plaque was unveiled at the site of Arsenal's old ground for a legendary saint who started his career at Winchester City. The honour was placed out of respect at Highbury for the Gunners' fifth all-time top goalscorer, Ted Drake, born 1912 and died 1995, and whose ashes are buried at the ground. The monument sits across the front of the old clock end in tribute to the late 1930s gunner, who was the North Londoner's top talisman in every season he played for them, following a move from second division side Southampton in 1934. At the Dell, the former Southampton-born and bred gasworker scored 50 times from 1931 until 1934 in just over 70 matches before being transferred to the North Londoners. The memorial was arranged by Ted Drake's great-grandson and forever passionate Arsenal and Saints fan, Liam Harding. Drake to this day holds the record for the most goals, 7, scored in an English top-flight game of football still standing nearly 90 years later, which he set on December the 14th, 1935, at Villa Park with a rightful 8 actually denied for greed in the final minutes. The England international, who scored 6 goals in 5 games, remembrance plaque reads, "In loving memory of Ted Drake, whose ashes are buried at this stadium, the scorer of 139 goals in 184 games between 1934 and 1939. He was one of Arsenal's greatest ever strikers. He lifted 2 Division 1 titles at the North Londoners, as well as 1 FA Cup, in which he scored the winner and the only goal in 1936, when injured late on versus Sheffield United in a 1-0 triumph for Arsenal at Wembley. He is the quickest Arsenal player in history to bag 100 goals in only 108 appearances. Ted also set the current goal-scoring feat at the Gunners for the most strikes, 44, achieved in a season at Arsenal during the 1934 campaign. After his playing career came to an end due to back injury picked up in the RAF during the Second World War, Drake went into management. In 1955 at Chelsea, he heralded the league championship, becoming the first player, then manager, to clinch the top flight of English football, sealing the Blues their first ever major honour.
And here we have restaurant opens at historic vineyard. A new restaurant has opened at England's oldest commercial vineyard. The venue, designed by Mowat & Company, is located at the top of Hambledon Vineyard, which was first planted in 1952. The restaurant is housed in a modern green oak barn with contemporary furnishings that honour the spirit of the trailblazers who established the vineyard. The restaurant is part of a wider visitor experience, which includes educational facilities. It is set in the South Downs National Park, with a bar in a tall oak barn and the restaurant in a lower barn overlooking the vineyard. The head chef, Nick Edgar, serves a fresh seasonal menu to accompany Hambledon's sparkling wines. The large barns were designed and made in green oak, which has a rough and agricultural quality in keeping with the vineyard. The furniture is made from a refined palette of ash and walnut, which is smooth and delicate. Several pieces of bespoke furniture were designed, including movable retail units for Hambledon products and items sourced from partner companies in the South Downs. A timber-wrapped spiral staircase connects the bar to a future phase below. A culinary garden outside the restaurant has been planted in collaboration with expert plantswoman Emily Earlham. By the summer, it will start to provide flavours and herbs for the chef and his team. And this is accompanied by two beautiful photographs, one of the bar in a tall oak barn, which is entirely light-coloured wood going up into the ceiling and with the sun streaming in from the south onto the bar stools, which will be serving the local sparkling wine. And the other is of the head chef, Nick Edgar, who is clearly cooking up fresh seasonal menu so that you can eat there as well to accompany the sparkling wines.
Exploring the Antarctic through virtual reality. Visitors to Winchester Cathedral were in for a rather unusual experience at the weekend as they got to explore the Antarctic as well as the historic venue. A team from the University of Southampton was showcasing an augmented reality experience which brings to life the migratory journey of whales via virtual reality headsets in the cathedral on Saturday, February the 15th. The project was created by Winchester School of Art and sponsored by the Southampton Marine and Maritime Institute. It took visitors on an adventure on board RSS Discovery, which reached Antarctica 5 months after setting out in January 1902. Headsets were placed over eyes and ears before the immersive experience took over. Dr. Felix Pedrotti said, "We are here to bring history and science closer to the people. Through the medium of virtual reality, we can tell the stories that happened and help the public to visualise them so they get a chance to get as close as possible to the past." The VR showcase was part of a 2-week-long series of events at the cathedral themed around whales and the ocean. Of course, the main draw at Winchester Cathedral this month is an exhibition of 3 large monumental sculptures of sperm whales created by artist Tessa Campbell-Fraser, which hang from the cathedral's nave. We stopped and looked in awe. We also visited the Cathedral Kings and Scribes exhibition in the South Transept, which traces the story of Winchester Cathedral from its Anglo-Saxon origins to the present day. Interactive exhibitions, as well as friendly guides, make a visit here interesting and educational for all. We also took steps down to see the crypt, which at this time of year has a few feet of water, making Anthony Gormley's sculpture, Sound 2, look eerily brilliant.
Battle looming on Holmes' plan. Hundreds of people gathered to oppose plans for houses on countryside on the edge of Winchester. City councillors and residents came together to organise their fight against the biggest development seen in Winchester for years. The Clare Group wants to build 188 homes on land off Lanham Lane that is designated as countryside in the local plan. Councillors Martin Todd and Kelsey Lerney addressed the packed meeting at St Barnabas Church on Promont Road Week on Wednesday evening. Councillor Lerney said, "We are as certain as we can be that the City Council will turn down this application. We believe that's what the developer expects too. However, that's not what they're after. What they want to do is to go to a government planning inspector and say, Winchester needs more houses and our site is ready to go." There were hundreds present at the Lib Dem councillors, Lib Dem councillor Lerney and Todd, also supported by Conservative group leader Caroline Horrell, informed people how to make the best case against the development. There have been well over 100 objections so far, and their quality was praised by Councillor Todd, but going forward, objectors were told to object on points of local and national planning policy. Councillor Horrell said, "If you give them," that's the developers, "something that they can bat back on easily, that will give them a bit of mantle saying, let's be very clear, this is a really sound planning application." The councillors also told of the rigour and strength of Winchester's local plan, which would more than meet government requirements. Under the current local plan, the land at Lanham Lane is not considered for housing development. Councillor Todd said, "We will be fighting very hard every step of the way to say this local plan is the right plan. Everything that's come forward needs to comply with this, and we're doing everything we can to make sure that we don't lose control of the planning process. Or you'll get what you call planning by appeal, poor quality designs without the infrastructure coming through." The development at Lanham Lane is for nearly 200 homes and involves building on land designated as countryside.
And here we have challenging play on words. A play about a law limiting people to 140 words per day is coming to Winchester. Titled Lemons, 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 the play will be performed by the Chesil Theatre between May the 17th and the 24th. This romantic comedy by Sam Steiner debuted at the Edinburgh Fringe in 2015. Since then, it has been performed around the world in more than a dozen languages. In 2023, the play was performed in the West End with Jenna Coleman and Aidan Turner as the lawyer and musician who have to learn a different way of communicating when the number of words have run out. And as I understand it, this play is going to have two separate casts of two. Each cast is a cast of two performing on different days of the week at the Chesil.
This item is about a historic steam locomotive restored for return to tracks. An historic steam locomotive is making a return to the tracks after a 14-year restoration project. The Watercress Line has announced that the SR Merchant Navy class locomotive number 35005, Canadian Pacific, will be back in action next month. The steam engine, built in 1941 by Southern Railway at the Eastleigh Locomotive Works, has been restored by the Watercress Line staff and volunteers, with support from the National Lottery Heritage Fund. The restoration project, which began in 2011, involved more than 10,000 hours of volunteer work and the creation of six apprenticeships. The locomotive underwent a complete overhaul, including the reconstruction of the boiler, frame repairs, and the restoration of mechanical components. Rebecca Daly, CEO of the Watercress Line, said, This fantastic restoration of the historic locomotive Canadian Pacific is a testament to the dedication of our volunteers and the unwavering support of our partners. Canadian Pacific is not just a locomotive. She represents the rich heritage of British engineering and the enduring spirit of our railway community. The Canadian Pacific was designed for Southern Railway by Chief Mechanical Engineer Oliver Boulade. It provided wartime service on the South Coast route and was named after the shipping line that supplied Britain during the Second World War. After the war, it hauled luxury boat trains such as the Bournemouth Belle, Royal Wessex and Atlantic Coast Express. Volunteer Steve Wilson, who worked on the restoration, said, "Seeing the locomotive return to steam is a dream come true for all of us who have been part of this journey. It's a true labour of love, and I can't wait for the public to experience the magic of Canadian Pacific once again." The project was made possible through significant funding of $1,254,400 from the National Lottery Heritage Fund. And there's a fine picture of Canadian Pacific full steam ahead under a bright blue sky.
Tina's national role to further art in education. A University of Winchester lecturer has been elected to the council of a national body that promotes art in education. Tina Scahill, a lecturer in digital media design in the Faculty of Education and Arts, has been voted onto the National Society for Education in Art and Design, NSEAD, council. She was elected because of the need for voices from the higher education sector within this organisation. Tina, who is also a graphic designer and painter, is concerned about the declining presence of art in school curricula, with many students receiving only a single one-hour art lesson every fortnight. To counter this, she incorporates drawing and other analogue art methods into her teaching to help improve students' visual literacy and creative thinking. Tina said, "I think of it as walking up the creative side of the brain. Children are being denied a creative outlet because there is not the time or value placed in the school timetable for creativity. Her students, who might think of cut and paste as computer terms, are reacquainted with scissors, glue and a pile of magazines and asked to create a montage. Other traditional artistic endeavours include lino printing and making models from card. Students are also encouraged to have a sketchbook and to keep a visual diary." Tina said, "I think students really enjoy these sessions. There's always a lot of laughter when I ask them to sketch each other. Many don't realise how much they had missed actually touching and interacting with materials." She believes that creative thinking is key to problem solving and is highly valued by employers. According to the New Arts and Minds campaign, backed by the NSEAD, 2.5 million people are employed across the creative industries in the UK. In 2022, this sector contributed £124 billion to the UK economy, more than life sciences, aerospace and the automotive sectors combined. Before her election to the NSEAD Council, Tina was an observer for 2 years, involved in the Society's research group, working on gender, art and transformative education. She said, "It has changed my perceptions about art education."
And journalist, sailor and artist John Ismond. Journalist, author, sailor, musician and watercolour artist John Glasspool was a remarkable man. A member of Hillhead Sailing Club for more than 50 years and a Daily Echo writer for several years, he has died at his Winchester care home, aged 93. John, a long-term resident of Titchfield, was born in Southampton in 1932 and evacuated to Wimborne during the war. Encouraged by his parents, he developed a love for reading, learning and exploration from a young age. But he was a small boat yachtsman at heart and crewed frequently on yachts of all types. Excuse me. Following national service at the British Military Hospital in Hanover, just 5 years after the end of World War II, John joined a gas company for a short time before becoming a general journalist at Salisbury Magistrates Court. He joined the Southampton Evening Echo in 1955 before moving to the Portsmouth Evening News as the sailing correspondent 3 years later. After a short spell in Wimbledon, he returned to Southampton to join the Features team, contributing a weekly yachting column and writing under the pseudonym Tony Bargate. John wrote 4 books, 2 editions of Open Book Cruising, Boats of the Long Shoremen, and Solent Shores, a history of the Solent Shores from Bembridge to the Needles on the Isle of Wight and Hurst Castle to Chichester. John was married to Liz for 20 years from 1971 and then to Roma until she died in 1997. Known for his kindness and generosity, John had many interests, from outdoor adventures to cultural pursuits, all approached with his trademark enthusiasm and dedication. His knowledge of wooden boat repair and maintenance was unmatched, and he once navigated to shore through thick fog just by shouting across and fixing his position. John's funeral will take place at Wessex Vale Crematorium on Tuesday, February the 25th at 3 p.m. and donations in his memory should be sent to social care charity the Brendan Care Foundation Care in Titchfield.
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts this week and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Richard Stead.
Bye-bye.
Heather Bryant.
Goodbye.
Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Steve Russell, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you have finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.